There's only going to be one thing that we're going to be discussing is the budget plan, I mean the plans, the strategic plans of the department and its budget. That's all we're going to be discussing from 9:30. We're supposed to start at 9:30, but it's later than 9:30, but I'm hoping that we finish long before 1:00. We'll try and conduct the meeting. So I'm welcoming you members, let's go straight to what we're going to be doing, which is there's only one item. It's this one about the department. Department, I'm sure you are welcome to this meeting. I see there are no males, it's only females, which is very good. It's more than 50%. It's a good thing that you only brought females, because we can't regard Joe as part of your department. We regard him as ours. I'm sure you know the people that you're going to be presenting to, the members that are here. But despite the fact that you know them, let me request them to tell you who they are. Starting from Uma Dube, and then we'll go that way. Uma Dube, tell them who you are.
Morning, everybody. I am Molebopeng Christina, well known as Grace Dube, member of this portfolio committee deployed by the African National Congress. Thank you.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Lekato, a member of this committee. Thanks.
Morning. My name is Marco Shalibenda Musepe. I'm no more a new member of the committee. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Well, I'm Patrick Hanare. I'm from COPE, but I'm a member of this committee.
Emma More. Thank you.
Mark Waters.
Thank you, members. There's a document that I found in my office, which I'm told that it didn't have budget, but it has got everything. Then I got another one here, which has got budget. I'm hoping that members have got this one that has got the plans and the budget. If somebody doesn't have it, then you guys could give you one of them. So we're going to be giving over to you, DJ. I just want to remind you that Ume More is related to the CEO of Bara. And that's how she was employed, that lady was employed, because they've got connections with Ume More. Okay, DJ, over to you.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, thank you again once more for inviting us. I would like to firstly also start by introducing our team. My name is Malebona Precious Masoso, Director General of Health. I've got with me the acting CFO, and I also have our planner, Melanie Zomeran. Our acting CFO's name is Tiny More. No, not Tiny More, I'm sorry. Chair, you've just destabilized me with the more name. It's Tiny Renny.
No, it's an easy name, More or More or More, whatever you say.
Tiny Renny, not Tiny More.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. This is the annual performance plan. According to the new Treasury Guidelines and Regulations, Department of Health and other government departments are supposed to develop an annual performance plan based on the strategic plan. Chair, as members may be aware, the minister signed the service delivery agreement with the president, which was the basis of the negotiated service delivery agreement. So we've gone back to look at the service delivery agreement and the strategic plan, which outlines the 10-point plan. And I'll explain what the approach has been and how we come to present this annual performance plan. It sets out the vision, and the vision that is outlined here is what is signed in the service delivery agreement, that out of the 12 outcomes, outcome number 2 is the one that makes reference to long and healthy life for all South Africans. And the vision chairs about improvement of health status of South Africans through preventing illnesses, promoting healthy lifestyles, understand, the service delivery agreement that was signed has four key outputs, and these are increasing life expectancy, decreasing maternal and child mortality, combating HIV/AIDS, and decreasing the burden of TB, as well as the strengthening of health systems and effectiveness. Chair, these outcomes are also aligned to the Millennium Development Goals. So as we implement as a country, the annual performance plan will also be working towards achievement of our MDG targets. We also, Chair, try to bring a link and interrelation between the service delivery agreement and what is in the 10-point plan. And we are hoping that whatever will be done in terms of the service delivery agreement and what was outlined in the 10-point plan will also be the basis of what in future will be achieved by the National Health Insurance. Chair, I would like to just give you an outline so that you can see the link between the two components. In the service delivery agreement, the first part actually deals with the burden of disease in the country, which the minister has rightly outlined as a quadruple burden of disease. And this was also published in the Lancet article in 2009. It sets out exactly what the burden of disease is, and is quadruple mainly because of the burden of disease in terms of maternal health indicators, the child mortality rates, but it's also because of the burden of HIV/AIDS, TB, the burden of non-communicable diseases, as well as the burden of violence and injury, as well as trauma. Now, for us to be able to reduce the burden of disease, it would require of us to strengthen the health system. And the elements of the health system which require strengthening, Chair, are those below the line, and they are about the revitalization of health through primary health care-oriented service delivery. Secondly, it's about improvement of our quality of services, particularly the public sector, but it's not exclusively for the public sector. Thirdly, it's about improvement in the human resources for health. Thirdly, it's about improving access to health facilities. Fourthly, it's about improving financial management. Again, national health insurance through proper health financing. And fourthly, about health information. And lastly, intersectoral action for social determinants of health. Chair, the last one is mainly about partnerships between different government departments, but also with other partners to address the main social determinants that are the cause for ill health, and also the risks, mitigating some of the risks that we're aware of that contribute to health. It's mainly to say that health cannot just be about providing treatment, it's also about dealing with these social determinants of health. Okay, for the first one, our approach to responding, and this is mainly linked to reduction of HIV infections through preventative strategies. The first is that we'd like to increase condom distribution annually, male condoms as well as female condoms. Secondly, to increase medical male circumcision significantly during the period. And we've got fairly high targets, Chair, and I think we've put this significantly because we really think we have to scale up our efforts of prevention. Thirdly, again, further increase ACT campaign so that it's sort of a way of life. People test on a regular basis. From the tests that we've conducted so far, it is quite clear that 18% of South Africans are HIV positive. So it means the remaining ones that we've tested are negative. Now, our continued campaign to have people tested, to increase condom use, is just to help them stay negative, because if we can insist and persist in sending preventative messages and helping people remain negative, it can be one particular gain that we can make as a country. And for those who are positive, you can continue. And for those who are positive, Chair, to get them to access treatment as soon as possible so that they can remain alive. I think those are the two key emphases I wanted to make. And for those who are positive, for the new ones, we'd like to increase treatment so that we scale it up during this time frame, the NTEF time frame. But we'd also like to increase the proportion of primary health care facilities where we can introduce nutritional interventions, particularly for those who are HIV positive, as well as those who have tuberculosis. For the second one, Chair, like I said in the last brief, is that we'd like to intervene at different levels in our attempt to reduce child mortality, to target perinatal in all the phases of childhood development, target for infants, children, but also youth, ensure that we can maintain the percentage of children under 1 year of age fully immunized, and ensure that we can maintain our measles immunization at the level of 95% throughout the MTEF period, increase also number of sub-districts that implement school health chair, and school health would like to also aggregate this into three components. The first is children under school going age, to see how we can access them in while they're still in development, because early childhood development is significant. And we'll be working with social development and at school going age to introduce interventions that can improve health of those school going children and ensure that they're fully immunized, that there's no stunted growth, and also that there can be oral health services. Thirdly, for the adolescent to deal with problems of teenage pregnancy, substance abuse. As you know, Chair, the substance abuse agenda is led by social development, but there are certain health-related activities that relate to substance abuse that we'd like to tackle from a health perspective. Again, Chair, for all risk behaviors that are linked to this particular age group, we'd like to tackle. And we'll continue to provide a vitamin E supplementation for children that are under 59 months. Next slide. For maternal mortality, Chair, we'd like to reduce the ratio significantly by intervening in the antenatal phase and also postnatally. We'd like to have interventions both and postnatally. With antenatal care, we want to ensure that most women can access antenatal services. We've just started programs of targeting households in KZN and Eastern Cape. We'll be getting the results of the preliminary work that we've done, but we're using tuberculosis as an entry point. And postnatally, we'll also be able to follow up on those women who have been attending antenatal clinics. For those who do not attend antenatal, we'd like to encourage them to. And it's the only way we can know if we can support the different households. Again, we'd also like to ensure that termination of pregnancy is not done outside the health facilities, and to bring about regulatory measures that can ensure that. Next, please. For reproductive health, cervical cancer screening is becoming a problem because of HIV/AIDS related opportunistic infections. And we'd like to scale up our efforts in confronting cervical cancer and improving our screening services, as well as breast cancer. I thought I needed to add that. But also, average chair has increased in that the latest data that we have from National Health Laboratory Services shows that it's actually decreased our infection transmission actually from 10% to about 4.5% across provinces, and we'd like to scale up our efforts to further decrease those transmission rates significantly. Secondly, we'd like to ensure that even babies who are testing positive after birth, that we can have those reduced further. We'd like to also, where appropriate and where women qualify, introduce treatment. And lastly, because we've seen in other countries that this has significantly reduced transmission rates to up to between 1 and 2%. And this is mainly to say that if there's an opportunity to reduce that margin further, it will help us as a country to have at least children who are born HIV negative. And if our target is properly set, we can actually have what we call HIV survival at 24 months, meaning would like to have children who are healthy and who are free of HIV AIDS at 24 months. With regard to tuberculosis, Chair, we are going to increase the cure rate from 70% to 85%. 85% is a target that has been set by WHO. And the only way we can achieve this is through increasing our case finding activities and also reducing defaulter rates. For defaulter rates, if we have more people treated early, it will reduce the risk of multi-drug resistant TB. So those are the two key interventions, because TB is a killer and its risk is increased by comorbidity with HIV. The earlier we intervene, the better. So if we get them early, we can put them on treatment as soon as possible. And this co-infection of TB and HIV is a real concern. So if we embark on the ACT campaign, it also helps us screen people as well for tuberculosis. But we'd like to take the campaign further, not to wait for people to come for testing, but to expand it, to do tests even in communities, in households, as we visit families. The results that we have so far, we've taken data from those provinces and even districts where we think the burden, the case, there are high case loads, high TB case loads, and for those high case TB case loads, this is where we're going to intensify our efforts in trying to decrease the spread of tuberculosis. And this will be coupled with our interventions of introducing prevention through using cotrimazole and INH prophylaxis. For communicable and non-communicable diseases, the first one, Chair, is that for malaria, as a country, we are doing very well in that we've reduced the risk of malaria, particularly for the endemic areas in the country that border with Mozambique and Zimbabwe. But those areas where we put a lot of effort is for chronic diseases, non-communicable diseases. At the moment, we have not done a similar detection like we did for HIV/AIDS, and we'd like to do that for communicable diseases. Now, diabetes is a silent killer because people never know when they have diabetes. So what we'd like to do is to test them early, detect diabetes early so that they can get treatment on time and improve their lifestyle and their eating habits. And equally, we'd like to do the same for cardiovascular diseases. And we'd like to scale up our efforts for mental health and improve our mental health services. So we are also, Chair, going to be working on providing support, like I said, for cervical cancer and breast cancer. And of course, all the other cancers will not discriminate, will also try to tackle prostate cancer because it's an increasing problem in our country. The next area, Chair, is that the way to also, it will not just be about detection, but also to promote a healthy lifestyle, and we will share the program of the healthy lifestyle with you, including promoting healthy lifestyles, Chair, in Parliament for MPs. The Minister will announce when that will happen.
Now that will be compulsory.
Pardon?
That will be compulsory for members.
Well, we're hoping that if Parliament can set the tone and the scene, it will give the rest of the country encouragement and motivation.
Ministers can put laws so you can make it compulsory.
Yes,
we work on that.
Would appreciate it. We'll be guided by yourself. Chair, for the environmental health services, as you noticed, we because of climate change and also our obligations to have a clean environment, we also have to address environmental health, which is a key risk element in what I referred to earlier as social determinants of health. So we will be working with the Department of Environmental Services to see how we can deal with the with improving our environmental support. Go back a bit. One of the areas, Chair, is to look at how we can increase the number of our environmental officials, inspectors on ground level to work. It's one particular area that we'd like to strengthen. Chair, for engineering, primary health care, because we are building a model based on community health workers, we've got two approaches. One is that we'll have community health workers who will work as part of teams with nurses and doctors to do outreach program. But we'll also have to support a clinical services. We'll have at district level a team of specialists, particularly obs and gynae, as well as pediatricians, midwives, and primary health care nurses. The reason, Chair, is because we need these teams to help with oversight in each of the districts to ensure that we can reduce maternal and child mortality. And as a strategy, if we have these teams with oversight, support, training, and also clinical interventions, we are hoping that we'll be able to achieve that. But this will be a support also to the outreach programs that have been set. Next, please. For the delivery of health infrastructure, Chair, like I said in the past, that this is going to be one of the areas where we improve what we call health facility planning to ensure that we've calculated already now, we know how long it takes people to walk to facilities, and how long it takes for ambulances to carry people to facilities. Now, because we've done that exercise, we're looking at whether is it appropriate for certain services from where they're placed, so that this can be a basis of informing how we then locate the future services, and also reorganize our mobile services where fixed structures are not available. But in addition, Chair, would like to ensure that our hospitals, particularly the tertiary hospitals, are operational and are also functional. It's one particular area that we'd like to strengthen. And this will be two-pronged. For those facilities that are dilapidated, will ensure that resources go to improve the infrastructure in those facilities. Those that are not appropriately equipped would like to ensure that we have an equipment, a plan. We've actually started setting up what we call equipment committees. Now, these are committees that will be established that will involve clinicians so that the purchase of equipment is not just left to administrators, but it's also a team in facilities. We'll be finalizing the essential equipment, particularly for primary health care, just to make sure that every facility has appropriate equipment and is maintained. Chair, for the flagship projects, we've already signed an agreement between DBSA and CSIR, who are now providing project management support, and we're working collectively to do this. So far, we, as part of the grants, 41 hospitals will be under construction in this period, and 25 will be in the planning phase. The workforce planning, Chair, this is an area where we've had repeated questions from the portfolio committee requesting the plan. I thought from what I presented in the last portfolio committee, or what I shared with you, it was in support or an update of what had previously been presented. Chair, in 2006, the National Human Resource for Health Planning Framework was developed. But we've gone back again to look at some of the projections here and the skill base and the numbers that are needed for the purpose. So if you read what we've prepared so far, it's actually to say that we needed to have a model. So we've done some modeling of some sort on how we project for the future, because there are a certain number of HR issues, so that it can be a basis on which we can see how we make use of the foreign workforce, how we get our institution to produce the appropriate number of health workers we want at different levels and by different institutions. So this is our planning approach, which will mainly move from what has been planned before and which is a bit forward-looking. But it will also take into account the fact that we are going to use a support personnel and non-clinical workforce like community health workers as a pillar of support, but also as a link between communities and health facilities. As to healthcare financing, Chair, the draft NHI document will be tabled at Cabinet and will be published for comment. For quality of health services, Chair, we've been doing preliminary work. The first is that we are busy doing an audit of all facilities to look at what I've presented as part of the system strengthening. We want to check the level of readiness of our facilities. We want to check so that when the accreditation in terms of the Office of Standard Compliance, that they comply. If they don't, they've got what we call quality improvement plans in place. We've just been busy with the assessment of our clinical program to see whether we've got adequate infection control nurses and personnel. But the approach that we take, Chair, is that we don't want quality to be reduced to Office of Standard Compliance. Our view is that quality must be a way of life. It must be a culture. Everybody must see quality as their business. It must not just be limited to an infection control nurse. Yes, infection control nurse is an important player, but important player as part of a team. So for us to be able to address the six elements, cleanliness must be everybody's business. Infection control, yes, will have focal persons, but in addition to focal persons, we'd like to have clinicians also play a role and other health workers. we would like to just reconfirm this by having patient satisfaction and surveys conducted from time to time. In this regard, Chair, would like to have if this goes through soon, a patient safety forum, because this forum will be the one that helps with the conducting of survey in an independent manner. Chair, for us to be able to do that, we need a budget, and we've I would like to, before I give the CFO an opportunity to present, I just want to explain how we've come across this. We've got our budget that has been allocated, but in addition, we've asked for some bids to be approved by Treasury, and the aim was that we wanted to do preparatory work for NHI, mainly to improve the quality of our health facilities. Secondly, to increase our health workforce. As you may recall, Chair, we've had problems with the vacancy of registrars. So we asked for a bid for Treasury to create pools for registrars. And as an aim to strengthen our primary health care, I made reference to the teams, the maternal and child health teams. And with respect to those teams, we'd like the post of gynecologists and pediatricians created in those districts. And the allocation has been made in that respect. In addition, Chair, some of the funding will go towards health infrastructure. And the health infrastructure, mostly it will be for oversight, but also to partner with others to have public-private partnerships in the, particularly for the flagships. We'll share the modeling with you. But that oversight role will be provided by mainly by CSIR in partnership with Treasury as well as DBSA. Because of the need to strengthen our information system, we've also had some allocation in that respect, and we will be using that to strengthen our district health information system. So, Chair, with that kind of background, I'd like to then give over to CFO. In our presentation, we separate the funding that has been allocated through BIDS, and we show some of the funding that is key, particularly for preparatory work for NHI, and funding that is needed anyway for us to meet our targets as indicated for the Millennium Development Goals and so on. Okay, Chair, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, and thank you, DG. During the medium-term framework, which we call the MTEF, during the budget process, the department actually requested 19.9 billion from Treasury through the bids, and the department received 18 billion of that, made up of 3.4 billion for the National Health Department and 14.6 for provincial health departments, which I will elaborate further on. In terms of the expenditure trends, the department's expenditure grew from 13.6 billion in the financial year 2007-2008 to 23.1 billion in the financial year 2010-11, which is the current financial year, at an average rate of 19.4%. Over the medium-term period, expenditure is expected to grow to 30.1 billion at an average annual rate of 9.2%, and the increase in both periods, meaning the 207-208 financial year and the current up to 2010-2011, the increase is largely driven by transfers to provinces, as previously presented to the Portfolio Committee. The transfer payments make up plus minus 96% of the budget of national health. And the main increases are in the HIV and AIDS grants, the revitalization of hospital grants, that is over the period, and then for the next MTEF, NTSG has received a significant increase. I will elaborate on the figures later. And then during the current MTF period, the Forensic Pathology Services Grant will be phased out as planned in the 2012-2013 financial year. And therefore, the outer years of that, that grant have been included in the baseline of the provincial allocations. So in summary, the MTF allocations for 2011-12 to 2013-14 totals to 442 million for the National Health Department for 2011-12, 692 for 2012-13, and 2.2 billion for 2013-14 financial year. As the DG has already indicated, there's additional funding for the baseline at national. So I will focus first on the baseline at national and then come later to provinces and also separate between NHI preparation work. We have received 3 million, 5 million, 7 million for the three financial years for the Health Systems Trust, which is a non-governmental organization to support health systems research activities, including the annual health review and district health barometer.
Sorry, CFO. Okay, are you reading from this now?
That one.
That one, but in ours, do we have it in this document? We don't have it in this document. Or it's in the book?
Oh, apologies, Chair. What I'm reading is what you have in the copies that that are in. Okay, it's in the annual performance plan. Maybe I should direct you to page 38. I just decided to extract it and put it in the PowerPoint plan. I mean, presentation of the document.
The unfortunate part is that some people didn't bring their annual performance plan.
We can share our
plan.
Copies.
Okay, can we share your copies?
Yes. Apologies for this, Chair. Then we can give this presentation also. Chair, can I explain that what I'm presenting is the narrative side, but what the documents that you have, there's a table that explains what I'm talking about, so we can link the two. So we thought, as an afterthought, that we should make it easier for the members to follow.
Okay.
Can
okay,
I proceed? Sir,
I'll proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. I had already talked to the first bullet. So, and then we also received 2 million. Okay, let me start. DG directs me to start. Okay, we'll start up there. We received 3 million for 2011-12, then 5 million for 2012-13, and then 7 million for 2013-14.
Sorry.
38.
Sorry, sir, can you help me? Are there other things that you are going to refer to your own document and these booklets so that we can go and collect them? Or this is the only part that you're going to be.
This is the only part.
This is the only part.
The rest of it, it's easy to follow. It's in the presentation.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Are we all together?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, members. Okay. So we received those amounts for the Health System Trust to support health systems research activities, including the annual health review and district health barometer. We also received 2 million per year, meaning 2 million 2011-12, 12-13, and 13-14, to publish the standardized annual health statistics in the new annual health statistics publication to facilitate performance auditing and better inform the public and health service providers. This is a new initiative. We also received 5 million, 6 million, 7 million for the compensation for occupational disease, the CCOD, Chair will remember that at the SCOPA, this was the issue that the DG had raised, that we are definitely working towards improving the capacity and the functionality of the CCOD. We also received 60 million for 2011-12, 2012-13, 60 million, and then 1.4 billion for the HIV and AIDS conditional grant for the rapidly growing treatment program and to strengthen prevention programs, including 60 million per annum for the male circumcision program. DG has already alluded to that one. We have received 10 million per financial year, which is 30 million for the 3 years, for the forensic chemistry laboratories to purchase equipment and appoint staff to address backlogs at the laboratories. Also 10 million to the South African Health Products and Regulatory Authority to establish itself and to deal with the medicine registration backlog. This is a once-off payment based on the understanding that the regulatory authority will generate and retain its own revenue going forward. So we receive that this money for 1 year, and then the two outer years, it will sustain itself. We also received 30 million for 2011-12, 30 million 2012-13, and for the 13-14 financial year also 30 million to progressively increase the distribution of condoms. And it will be for both male and female. We've received 9 million, 5 million, and 5 million to nursing colleges to plan and coordinate the second phase upgrading, recapitalizing, and maintaining nursing colleges following the infrastructure.
Sorry. Is that something that we don't understand? I'm asking the member.
No, I was saying besides the hard copy, there's this one that we received that went together with the second copy that has a budget issue. So everything is here as well. These people brought it.
Is that clear?
No, CFO.
What the members are saying, they are not disturbing you,
okay.
but they are saying they are trying to tell each other that there's another document that we got, but they're not looking at that has got the same information that you're giving us.
Okay.
So, Dadelkhan, I was going to ask that maybe we need to put ourselves on silent, or then we can Twitter, or we can do all these things that makes us to remain quiet in the. Otherwise, it disturbs the presenter if we start talking. Okay, continue, Sefo.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, I was talking about the condom distributions, and then now we are at the last bullet on that slide, which is 9 million, 5 million, 5 million to nursing colleges to plan and coordinate the second phase of upgrading, recapitalizing, and maintaining nursing colleges following the infrastructure audit. That's what shared with the members. Now, the next slide indicates allocations that the department received, which, as the ODG has already indicated, are preparatory work towards NHI. So it's 10 million, 20 million, 10 million for the Office of Standards, Compliance and Quality Assurance to establish itself and to support its inspectorate, certificate of compliance and ombudsman functions. Are we still together? Thank you. The next funding that we received is related to infrastructure. It's 21 million, 17 million, and 13 million for infrastructure management and private-public partnership to build up capacity in the department to oversee the hospital revitalization project and to support planning, transaction advisor, and cost for large private-public partnership projects. This amount includes the money that the DG referred to, that it's for infrastructure at provincial level, but now it's at national, so the money will be transferred to the provinces from national. 5 million, 7 million, 9 million for the health technology to support provincial upgrading of engineering workshops and equipment audits, and to develop equipment packages and systems for health technology.
Chair, on this one, we have appointed 36 technical engineers, clinical technicians and engineers. They will be going for training from the 28th of March. The aim is that we would like to take them in groups so that as we train them, we deploy them to provinces so that we can start setting up the workshops and for maintenance and support and repairing a broken equipment. So this project is starting immediately. We've recruited them already. So they're going to be trained.
How many? 23?
It's 36. The first intake is 36.
Okay, and then specifically for the Office of National Health Insurance, that is at National Health, the unit has received 5 million per year for support and development of work and for projects including the Ministerial Advisory Committee. This is the money that they use as a unit, but the rest of the money is allocated for preparatory towards the NHI. Furthermore, we have received 4 million in the year 2011-12, 5 million in 2012-13, sorry, 4 million in 2011-12, 4 million in 2012-13, and 5 million in 2013-14 to develop improved hospital tariff schedules for use by provinces and the Road Accident Fund. This is a revenue intervention program to ensure that we collect what we are owed and we generate more income, including improved uniform patient fee structure, road accident fund reimbursement and tariff structure, and developing diagnosis-related groups system.
Share with the members, we have in the financial year 07-08 and 08-09 and more recently 09-10. For the first financial year, we've collected about 250 million from road accident funds. So it was a backlog of funds that had to be collected. And then we've also collected for the subsequent year, and we've updated our records. We now have collected up to 08-09 about 154 million. So with that collection system that we've established, would like to do the same for the medical aid industry and other patients who can afford to pay, particularly private patients. So we've established that. But Chair, the Chapter 6 of the National Health Act makes provision for revenue collection and retention, and we've prepared regulations that are supposed to be out for publication. These regulations will actually be enabling for us, particularly for tertiary hospitals, to collect revenue.
Thank you, DJ. We also have received 5 million per financial year of the 3 years for the health information systems to support national work group investigations of new patient-based IT system, and to propose the next steps in the IT infrastructure to support the district health information system. We also have received additional funding. This is the second funding from Treasury, 2 million for year one, 3 million year two, and 4 million to monitor and support provinces in order to stabilize provincial finances and improve the audit outcomes. Lastly, we have received 250 million, 500 million, 750 million for the National Tertiary Services Conditional Grant to support public hospitals to achieve norms and standards, partly in preparation for the National Health Insurance Fund, health insurance, and to implement standards and guidelines of the Office of Standard Compliance and Quality Assurance, as well as to address differential cost of doctor-specific dispensation, OSD. So what I have presented members and chair are the narratives. Now the next slide, which is in the members' slides, now it's just a summarized way in a spreadsheet way. Man, it's a different version of the same thing that I have presented. So here it will be easier to follow. That I've already indicated condoms, 30 million per year, improved condition of services, that this is for national only, 13 million, 15 million, and 16 million. Office of Standard Compliance, 10 million, 20, and 10 million. Forensic chemistry laboratories, equipment and filling of posts, 10 million per year. The oversight of hospital revitalization projects, 10 million per year. Health technology equipment packages, 5 million, 7 million, 9 million. And the PPP projects, 11 million, 7 million, and 3 million. The next slide talks to what I've already said, also for the nursing colleges. Those are the figures. This is for national health baseline. That's for nursing colleges. Those are the figures I've already mentioned. The national health insurance I've already mentioned. National work group investigations on patient-based information. Health, I mean, technology system, I've mentioned the figures. For revenue management, that the DG has just explained. Then the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority also, that is 10 million for year one only, as I've said, and then they will sustain themselves from the second year onwards. Health System Trust, those are the figures. Improvement of the management of CCOD, also those are the figures, and the units to support provincial finance based at national health, those are the figures allocated. And then the additional funding for the HIV and AIDS conditional grants, those are the figures, 60 million, 601.4 billion. And then the additional funding for National Tertiary Services Grants, 250 million, 507.15 total, as I've said. For national, the baseline has increased with 442 million. For year one, 692 year two, and 2.276 for year three. Now, this is how we have split the funding per program. Program 1 has received 282 million for year 1. Sorry, the current year is 282. You have those figures?
Yeah.
Okay. For year 1, we have allocated 326 million. It drops to 325 in the second year because of restructuring, and then 344 million in the outer year. Health planning and system...
Can I just, maybe before she proceeds... In the last presentation, we had mentioned that we're busy with restructuring. Now, for purposes of E&E, the budget program is already in the restructured manner. If you refer back to how the budget structure was allocated and the way the program was designed and described, because we have taken into account that maternal and child health are priorities, HIV and AIDS, TB are priorities,
Adam, is there something that you don't understand, Member Sifa?
You want a new one?
Okay.
Okay, continue.
Chair, we've actually taken priority areas, but we've also gone back to issues that you raised in response to the annual report, I'm sorry. There are a number of areas that you raised, but they're also based on the priorities that were set in terms of the service delivery agreement. We've gone back to check whether structure fit purpose, and in the manner in which we designed the program budgeting, we've tried to capture those things. The first one is about health planning and systems and enablement. Chair, like I said earlier, that we've changed our approach in ensuring that we have what we call health facility planning. That we also have a strong information base. So that will be the first program the second program that you see. The third would be HIV, AIDS, TB, maternal, child and women's health. These are the MDG goals. And we would like them to be given a priority. The next is about primary health care service. In line with the minister's emphasis of revitalization of health and strengthening of primary health care services. The third is about hospital tertiary services and workforce development. Issues of human resource has been raised repeatedly, and we wanted to give special attention and ensuring that it's not only human resource as a standalone, but it's linked to our the way our tertiary services are designed in colleges. The next is about regulations and compliance management. A chair is just to ensure that for all these laws that are published, we have regulations in place and we put teams and we have better oversight for the statutory bodies that have been established. I just wanted to give a background so that you can be aware that the program structure and as well as the budget program structure has changed.
Thank you for that, DG. As a result, we have indicated the current financial year, 2010-2011, so that members can see how it flows to the new reconfiguration of the budget structure. So those are the figures per program. And then the next slide is for economic classification. It also indicates an increase from the 385 for the current year. We are increasing to 424 in the 11-12, 465, 12-11, and then 492 for year 13 and 14. Goods and services, they also increase from the current, which is 755. For next financial year, we have allocated 785 million, 795 and 830 for the outer years. For the total transfers and subsidies, currently we are sitting at 21 billion. We are increasing to 24 billion because of the increases I've indicated for HIV and AIDS and REVITE and the National Tertiary Services grants. And then it increases to 26 billion and 28 billion in the outer years. Capital transfer, so the payment of capital assets, it's currently at 45 million, and then it drops to 33 million, 35 and 37 because these are once-off procurements. And then the total for the current financial year is 22.9, but we are increasing to 25.7 billion, 27 billion, 27.6 billion and 30 billion in the outer year. Within that allocation of 25.7 billion, 27.6 billion, and 30 billion, we have the following allocations for the conditional grants. As I said, it's more than 96% of our budget. Health infrastructure grant, which is a Schedule 4 grant, is 1.7 billion. This is the grant that we have inherited. Thank you, DG, for the correct word. Inherited from the provinces. So it's 1.7 billion year one, 1.8 billion year two, and 1.9 billion year three. The health professions and training development grant, it's also a Schedule 4 grant. It's 1.9 billion, 2 billion in the outer second year, and then 2.1 billion in the outer year. National Tertiary Services grant, also a Schedule 4 grant. I will explain why I'm emphasizing the schedules. It's 8 billion for year one, 8.6 for two for year two, and 9.3 billion for year three. Comprehensive HIV and AIDS, it's a Schedule 5 grant, has received 7.4 billion year one, 8.8 billion, and 10.6 billion year three. Forensic pathology services, as previously indicated, is only allocated for year one, which is in year 11-12. Which is 590 million, and then the rest of the allocations are in the baseline of the provinces for the two outer years. And the final grant is the hospital revitalization grant, also a Schedule 5 grant, allocated 4 billion year 1, 4.3 year 2, and then 4 billion year 5, sorry, year 3. And the total for the conditional grant for year 1 is 23.9 billion of the 25.7 billion. And year two, the grants are 25.7 billion of the 27 billion. And year three is 28 billion of the 30 billion. I was emphasizing the Schedule 4 grants specifically to indicate that it's for allocations to provinces to supplement the funding of programs or functions funded from provincial budgets. So it's almost like a top-up. So we can, when we do transfers, we cannot withhold any transfer to the provinces. However, in the new DORA bill, it's not an act yet, there is a provision that we can withhold 5% while we are addressing the shortcomings at provincial level. And the grants that are affected by this Schedule 4 are National Tertiary Services Grant, Health Professional Training and Development, and the Forensic Pathology Services Grant. The ones that fall under Schedule 5 are specific for purposes that have been agreed to between the National Health Department and the provinces, and these are for HIV and AIDS grants and the revitalization of hospital grants. And these ones we may withhold for non-compliance or non-performance while we are intervening. Having said that, we are now putting on the table all the allocations that we have received at national but are directly allocated to the provinces to top up their baseline. And these funds are earmarked and should be used for purposes intended for only. It's health technology. The provinces, all the nine provinces, will get proportional allocations based on the equitable share formula, which the DG will talk to later after I present, that they have all received 20 million, 30 million, and 40 million for the MTN period. Nursing colleges upgrading and maintenance, those are the figures, 32 million per financial year. The OSB for the doctors, for the top-up of the shortfall that we are experiencing, we have received 110 million, 119 million, and 126 million for the 3 years. And then OSB for therapeutic professionals also, it's a top-up. You want to talk to that?
Sure, I just want to comment about OSG. It's an area of concern in the manner in which the allocations have been done. Our view has always been that OSD, the funding should follow the number of people employed in a particular province. And we are of the view that Treasury should not have used equitable share, particularly for OSD, because what it meant is that if you have a certain number of health workers in a particular province, the calculation should then be linked to those number of people employed, not equitable share. So it is a bit of a problem for us, and we have raised this with Treasury, and I don't know how this will be resolved, because it's really, really going to cause us a lot of problems.
Thank you, Gigi. That is a concern, actually, for most of these allocations that we had requested Treasury, because there were specific bids for specific provinces. However, Treasury used the equitable share formula for all of them. Maternal and child health care, we have received 228 million for year one, 501 million for year two, and 700 million for year three. Personnel and goods stabilization at provincial level. Members will recall that we have been having challenges with over expenditures at provincial level. We are busy with interventions at provincial level. The position of Treasury and Cabinet is that we are not going to bail out any province. They must ensure that they have fiscal discipline themselves. However, Treasury has appreciated the fact that there are underfunding in some areas at provincial level, so that funding is for that. Then we have received money for HIV, ARV 350 threshold, which the DG can talk to.
Chair, if you may recall, there's been an approach that has been followed of trying to intervene early, particularly for HIV positive people. At the moment, we've defined a particular group, women and those with a comorbidity, to qualify for the increased threshold for 200 CD4 count to 350. But this is in preparation for increasing this to the rest of the other HIV positive people, to improve a threshold from 200 to 350. So it has quite a significant implications, particularly in planning forward. That's
received funding for specifically a registrar, and in this area specifically for pediatricians. Peter, can you help me with that?
Obstetrician and gynecologist.
Thank you, ma'am. For year one, we have received 100 million, year two, 200 million, and the outer year, 300 million. We also received family health team pilot models for primary health care, 100 million, 400 million, and 700 million. Public hospital norms and standards, this is directly related to the Office of Standards, but this is for at provincial level. We have received 240 million for year one, 486 million year two, and 532 million year three. And for all policy priorities, there's an amount of 1.7 billion and 3.7 and 4.8. This one is specifically because in the analysis that we did, which we gave the members the copies of from provinces, most of them have indicated that there are unfunded mandates from national. So this is the intervention that National Department is putting to address that, because they say we put policies but we don't fund them. So they can't say that anymore. Okay. So improvement in conditions of service, that which is for OSD at provincial level, is 1.5 billion per financial year. It's also a top-up because it was part of the, what they said is unfunded. Then lastly, the forensic pathology services. Year one is funded at national, but the other 2 years are funded at provincial level. So in total, in addition to the provincial baseline, the provinces received 3.2 billion year one, 5.9 billion year two, and 7 billion year three. However, as the DG said, we are concerned at national because not all provinces received these earmarked funds. We have a spreadsheet that we have prepared to indicate based on the allocation letters from provinces. Some received all the allocations, some did not, which is a concern that the DG will talk to in terms of how we take it forward at national. Thank you, DG. Should I finalize? Okay, in conclusion of the entire presentation, National Department, the annual performance plan for the year 11-12 to 2013-2014 reflect interventions to improve health service delivery and improve health outcomes for all South Africans, specifically also in line with the MDGs as the DG indicated. A sector-wide plan will be produced by the end of May this year, which will reflect the contribution of the entire sector, national and the 9 provincial departments of health, to the achievement of the health sector and the negotiated service delivery agreement. NSDA stands for the Negotiated Service Delivery Agreement Outcome. Thank you, Chairperson and DG.
Thank you. DG, do you have something to say?
Except that, Chair, in the sector-wide approach, we will be working with the other government departments to reflect where they are actually going to intervene. For instance, in partnership with certain government departments, we'll have a structured plan. Historically, we didn't have a formal process of reflecting these partnerships. There is a proposal for us to have what we call implementation forum. Now, the one particular implementation forum is the National Health Council, which is MINMED. The other, because all the MECs have signed the service delivery agreement, the other forum will actually be other government departments that are going to contribute. For instance, we are partnering with the Department of Basic Education on school health. So we will have a formal program with Department of Basic Education and ourselves on how we're going to improve school health. We have partnership with, for instance, higher education. We will then show how we're going to sign an agreement, particularly because the grants for higher education, the training grants requires that we repackage them. So there will be partnership with the higher education. So there are different government departments that will be partnering.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you very much, and the CFO. Members, this is a document that we are being given so that we can continue monitoring the department and at the same time try and see whether this money that they are being given, firstly, is it, do we think it's right for the department, knowing the department having been there to oversight the department? Secondly, are we sure that they're going to be using it the way it's supposed to be used? I think those are the questions that are going to be asking ourselves. I think themselves, they seem a little bit happy because you actually asked for, at a certain stage, you asked for 19 billion, you got 18 billion. And I suspect that you made it higher than what you wanted, but you almost got all what you wanted. But there are certain things. You know, most of this money goes to provinces. And we know that, except for the conditional grants, you don't have much say as to what happens in the provinces. And even the services that the minister has actually signed with the president, they're actually done in those provinces. And we seem not to have a proper control as to, if somebody does something wrong, can you fire that person? Or can you keep... I think it's something that we need to look into. I was looking at the drugs and devices. It seems as if when we talk about regulatory systems, we're saying devices and drugs, they're the same. I'm not sure whether I got you right. It seems as if, my thinking is that the device is slightly different from drugs. Probably we should be looking at, should we not have a regulatory area for the devices? Because they're separate from drugs, but we seem to be combining them. And in fact, even the money that we think you're putting on devices and engineering, which I think is good, but I'm not sure whether the level that you have put that directorate, is it right for somebody to handle that money. There's this other one of PPPs. I know there's certain provinces that have gone on PPPs. Have we checked how has it helped us, the PPPs, in those provinces? Because there's a lot of money that we're putting on PPPs now, which is a good thing, but have we checked what has happened in that one? The information system, which is supposed to be uniform, because you find that provinces are having their own information system, which are differing. And at some stage, they were quoting a very big amount of money that needs to go into that. But the money that has been, that you have got here, I don't think it's going to be enough to have a uniform, or else we're going to continue having these different systems in different provinces. I know MRC and SAFTA have been complaining of having a little bit, less money than what they can do in their areas. And then there's nothing that seems to be going that direction, helping them to get that. I agree that health systems have got some budget, which is quite good, but these other ones. The other thing that one notices is that we talk of primary health care, which is about 700 million, and we talk of tertiary services, which is about 13 billion. And we are saying that we are promoting primary health care specifically. I'm not sure whether are we doing what we are talking when we give 13 billion to tertiary services and 700 million to the other one. But it's something that probably you can explain to us. Somebody, when they presented, I think it was Dr. Masadi, when he presented, he talked about always doing some investigations, whether does it help, and this is what was reiterated by Bloemfontein, saying that it has not worked. We're putting money now. Are we putting in money where we think that it's going to help us, or we're just doing it because we're continuing without knowing exactly where the problem is? But with that, members, can I request that we go for tea and then we come back? Is it ready? Oh, the tea is still being prepared. Okay. So members, then we can go on to asking questions. I think we've got about almost 2 hours that we can go. I see Honorable Mike, I see Honorable Khanare. Are there any other hands? Okay, Honorable Lekheto. Honorable Kenya. Okay, we'll go that way. Okay, Honorable Mike. It's not working.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Just one observation on page 38 of the annual performance plan. If you look under what it says, NHI-related expenditure, the expenditure expenditure blows towards preparatory work for NHI. I mean, every bullet point except the fifth one, a fourth one, should be happening anyway in any health system. For example, the first bullet point talks about the Office of Standards Compliance. I mean, that is in law already from 2003. It should have been established. The second bullet point talks about infrastructure management and private sector partnerships to build capacity and hospital revitalization. That has, I mean, we've been having hospital revitalization for, I think, about a decade now, and it should have been happening anyway. Bullet three talks about health technology support, provincial upgrades, engineering workshops. I mean, provinces should have had engineering. They did have engineering workshops. I don't know what happened to them, but the fact is they should have been there in the first place. Okay, bullet four talks about the ministerial task team, which is costing us 5 million rand a year as an extra expense. Bullet five goes on about develop improved hospital tariff schedules. This talks about the road accident fund. And Chair, we've talked about this, giving hospitals incentives to keep money, even if it's part of the money. Remember, we talked about it last year, I think, and the year before. And the reason why hospitals don't collect money is because everything goes to province or national, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, we've talked about this. It's got nothing to do with NHI whatsoever. And the next bullet point, 5 million for health information systems to support national work group investigations into a new IT system for the country. Should have been happening anyway. The next bullet point, to monitor and support provinces in order to stabilize provincial finances. That should have been happening anyway. It's got nothing to do with NHI. And the next bullet point about National Tertiary Services Conditional Grant to support hospitals to achieve norms and standards. I mean, we should have had norms and standards anyway. So all I'm saying is, you know, all this should have been happening. So I'm glad it's happening. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad NHI is focusing. But all NHI, in my view, what I can see from the policy document, is bringing the extra layer of bureaucracy and centralizing funding, and making it very secretive as to who and how it's going to be funded, spent by Olive and a few of her friends, and that's about it. Anyway, but let me get on with my questions now that I've made my political point. Just on the 10 million a year for forensic chemistry laboratories, last year, if I remember correctly, we were told that they asked for 21 million, and they received something like 7 million, or something like, you know, my figures may be out by a few million. And Chair, as you know, they've got a huge backlog in in all three spheres of blood sampling for court cases for drunken driving, for food analysis, and for toxicology reports. And in fact, in the Joburg lab, I believe, is now 9 years behind in toxicology. It used to be 8, it's got even worse. Maybe you can confirm that or not, DG, but the fact is this 10 million enough? And If you say it is enough, by what date will the backlogs be eradicated for all three aspects of the responsibilities, please? And then you also don't mention, and I know you can't mention every directorate in the report, so I'm not criticizing, but if you could give us some indication, we've had the Directorate of Radiation Control come before us. Apart from all the lost radiation devices and the lack of inspections because of lack of staff, I mean, what extra funding are they being given as well over the MTF period? If you could just elaborate on that. And then very briefly, because I don't want to hog, Chair. I'm glad on healthy lifestyles you've talked about obesity. So Dr. Lucidi as well and I talk about it quite often because it's becoming a huge problem in this country, obesity, particularly amongst children. I think I can't remember the exact figures, but you know and I know and we all know. Just on the condoms, I mean, 1 billion male condoms is quite a lot, if you think of it. It really is. We've got a very active male population at all. But if you compare that to 6 million female condoms, I mean, it's really disempowering for women. Because, you know, we have a society where, unfortunately, men dictate, not in every household, but in a lot of households, they dictate when they have sex, and if they have use protection or not. And often the woman is disempowered. And so wouldn't it be, to me it makes more sense, distributing more female condoms than the male condoms, because it empowers the woman. At least she can protect herself to some degree. Then just on, I'm referring now to the slide presentation. Sorry, on page 9, I think it is. Yeah, you talk about maintain the percentage of children under 1 year of age fully immunized at 95%. Why not 100%? You know, why are we staying at 95%, given our Millennium Development Goals and where we are? And that goes for the second bullet point as well, about measles as well. Why 95%? Why not 100%? I'm glad you've talked about, you've given a lot of emphasis on child and maternal mortality, which hasn't been forthcoming from the department before, so I'm very grateful that we are giving it attention finally. Although I don't think it's going to help, it will help in reducing the mortality rate currently, but if we won't, I don't think we're going to reach our Millennium Development Goal by 2015, unfortunately. But as long as we are striving towards it, you know, we need to give a lot more emphasis. And then also on cervical cancer and breast cancer, why only 56% coverage, a 6% increase over the NTF period? I mean, you know, as far as I understand it, I mean, I went to that the conference here in Cape Town about a year ago, so, I mean, it's a simple procedure to sort of examine, and it's a bit invasive, obviously, but it's a simple procedure to examine one for cervical cancer in particular. So why are we only going to 56%? If you can elaborate on that. And then, Chair, just on, my last question, because I know I'm talking here. On slide 33, just to do with personalised and grid stabilisation, about the provinces going into the red, and the fact that you said there's no bailout from Treasury, and that, and I agree, I mean, provinces must have proper financial management. I mean, you can't just keep bailing them out. But the fact is, over the MTF period, we increased from 522 million to 1.4 billion. The Treasury in itself is stating, or we are, or you are the department, that you expect the financial situation of provinces to get worse. Because instead of this sort of grant decreasing, as provinces stabilise and bring in proper financial management, it's increasing over the MTF period. So where do you see this grant going? Do you see it increasing over the next 10 years, or will it eventually phase out? Okay. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Ndabekhana is going to be you. I just want to say, maybe, Department, I think you need to be commended on the fact that you've made a U-turn. I think we all agree that things have not been looking well in health, and they are still not looking well. Yet we're doing something. But now with your change, you've decided to change your programs so that they can fit in with what you want to see. Whether it's going to work or it's not going to work is another question, but the fact that you've decided to change and move another direction, I think we need to commend you on that. The male circumcision, I happen to be coming from Eastern Cape, and most of the circumcision there is done by the traditional surgeons. And the way the people do it, their own way. If you go to Madagascar, they do it their own way. If you go to Mtata, they do the surgeon there does its own way. And in fact, an example is Lesotho. Lesotho, every male goes for circumcision, but you still have a problem of HIV. It's because of the way they're doing it. They're not doing it the medical way. So I'm hoping that this money that you have put aside is going to be stressed that they must do it the medical way. But I know in certain areas they're going to refuse. They're going to say we want to do it the traditional way, and it does not help because they don't remove the Langerhans cells that actually are the carriers of the HIV around the foreskin.
No, I'll try not to be as long as a normal member of parliament. The issue of HIV AIDS prevention, you know, we are throwing a lot of money on it. I read a newspaper, I think, on Monday coming here. And in that newspaper, a certain pastor, Chris, it was stated there that he was praying to somebody who is HIV positive and told the person, now you are cured. You can go. I think it's the same problem we have for religious leaders and traditional healers or traditional doctors, whatever you call them, that they continuously give people an impression that AIDS can be cured. And we can put as much money as we can if they still give people hope that they are not being told the truth, because they have got the something to cure AIDS with. There's going to be a problem. I think somehow, it might not be in your budget, but we really have got to look into engaging these two components so that they can outrightly condemn people who continuously send wrong messages about HIV, AIDS, and the ability to cure that. The 9 million rand which you allocated to nursing colleges to plan and coordinate second phase of upgrading, I don't know whether this is linked with our human resource development strategy, and whether all these nurses, all these colleges, are geared towards increasing the intake. I'll be interested to know about how are they going to increase their intake to be able to ensure that we continuously have got proper skilled nurses. And the 3 million rand to health system trust, I just wanted to check whether this amount is what you negotiated with them, or is just a contribution towards them, and then they will see how they raise additional funds. The last issue is the hospital revitalization. Whether in terms of your own thinking and in terms of your budget, whether this involves both human resources allocation and equipment allocation.
Thank you, Nadesan. I think it's going to be Nadel Hedlo. After you, it's going to be Kenya. After that, it's going to be the Tilly. Okay. Just to make a comment on Pastor Cruz. You know, Pastor Cruz was taken to court by TAC, you know? That's all. On the same basis.
I don't know who
you know, he always comes to South Africa. I don't think he was coming for the first time. He claims that he can heal anything, everything. But in addition, Didi, to this one of traditional healers, I think most of the people who have noticed that in the media, there's a lot of things that are being said about people using body parts for whatever reason. Either you kill a person or you go to the mortuary and take a part of somebody because it's going to help you. I know in Eastern Cape, they were killing young ladies and taking the womb while she's still alive, because it is claimed that if you take the womb while she's still alive, she's crying, then that womb is going to help you to be able to bear kids. So they were doing it. They were doing it for that reason, and that's why probably we need to look into the traditional healers and see. I know not all of them are doing that. Maybe we need to call them to the community so that they can explain, and then we can decide how we do budget for them and make sure that.
Thanks. Let me also thank the presentation. You are saying you're going to built 41 hospital and 25 are on 20 phase. I just want to check with you because I think our approach is that the rural communities have been in the past neglected when it comes to infrastructure. I need to check with you, where are these construction taking place? The other thing is, you see, constructions of hospital as well as police stations, they take too long. My worry is that how long would it take you to start construct these 41 hospitals and planning? I am very happy that you are reducing the treatment of TB defaulters, and you are saying if this is detected earlier, then that would heal our communities.
Yes, I agree with the Honorable Waters on the issue of discrepancy distribution. That 1 billion to 6 million is too huge. But I do not agree with him when he says male dominates. Male dominate. I don't agree with that. That is an old. If he dominates, he must not presume that we dominate. Thanks.
Okay. Mekenyu, you are going to be the next one. The TB one, which we are supposed to reduce. After tea. I suspect, you know, when you go, there are certain areas in South Africa where we have never checked whether there's TB or not TB. And I presume that we are going to be going there to make sure that everybody gets. And my worry is that, are we not going to get a situation where the statistics are going to move up when we get into areas where we never got into? And that will seem as if we're not reaching the target. Yet, that is a sign of doing our work. I mean, doing your work. But I'm just mentioning it. The other one is that there's a lot of people who are still working in mines. And some of the TB is related to the silicosis that comes from the mines. I know there's some money that has been put for the compensation for the, but I think we need to find a way of working with the doctors and who are working for the mines to try and reduce this TB, because part of the TB is coming from there. Makenye, you are going to be the last one before tea, and then we go for tea, and then you'll be the first one to after tea.
Okay, Makenye.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue of condoms was my last point, but because I'm still hot, two men are discussing the issue of condoms now, fighting over it. Let me just explain it clearly as I usually do about this, because I'm gender sensitive, especially that I'm a woman leader. I always ask this question about these discrepancies in the issue of condoms. But now I hear Honorable Khetho now trying to throw it out of the window, as well as what Honorable Waters has said, trying to help us. The issue of this big gap, collective distribution of these condoms, is a worrying factor to us as women because of patriarchy. Patriarchy is that force, and in the rural areas, women are, you know, due to all patriarchy tendencies which still exist even now. So that is why you are worried when the women are getting a little share of condom distribution, in spite of all that problem that they are encountering, being dominated by males, as Honorable Waters has just said. That is true. I'm saying that as a woman who comes also from even rural areas where women are struggling. Because the reason why you are frustrated about this, because pregnancy, if we want to prevent pregnancy and HIV and AIDS burden, how can we say now? Because condom is a preventive measure in these areas. Therefore, women are supposed to get equitable share, even if they are healthy, because the Tibetan is always saying no. The female condoms are expensive and the male ones are cheaper. Yeah, we mean that now women are going to suffer because of this expensiveness and cheapness on the other side. If we can just get an equitable share as women. That's my first point, which was my last initial. Mm-hmm. On page 10, output 4, who let 3, 4, and 8 combined? I think you said in bullet 3, talk about the functionality, efficiency, and appropriateness of the organizational structure of each hospital. And in bullet 4, in page 30 of the book, of the original book, you talked about the quality improvement plans. And in bullet 8 of the same, in the same bullet, page 30, They're talking about the nutritional interventions. Now I'm combining them because I'm going to chop everything out of them. 3, 4, and 8, page 4, those bullets. If we say we want to improve, to get quality improvement plans, and we want to intervene in nutritional interventions in HIV mothers and babies, and I include babies, how are we going to achieve this? Because in bullet 8, we're talking about the monitoring and evaluation, strengthen information management, and enhance monitoring and evaluation. I'm concerned with these issues. Because if you want the quality improvement, you regard functionality and efficiency and appropriateness in the organizational structure of each hospital, and then also combine with quality improvement plans, I see a problem. How am I going to achieve this? If we take the very best nurses from the hospital to the director, to the officials in the department, for example, some are best nurses in the ICU, then we want to improve the plans. But there now, yes, I understand them about mobility, but at the same time, to take somebody who is very, the best nurse who can do some of these jobs we're talking about, this efficiency, this quality improvement, because most of them who are quality assurance nurses who are perfect, who are the best nurses in South Africa, are taken to the directorship posts. That's a concern to me from experience, because I haven't approved with that, but I'm not going to elaborate more. But you know what I'm trying to say. They are there now in the offices, holding those upper offices, but there you want to improve the plans in the hospitals. You say you want functionality and efficiency in the provinces, in the hospitals, but there you are taking away the nursing profession to the office, to be officials in the highest positions. And then on the effect of this monitoring and evaluation on age, this is why I'm saying this, HIV mothers and babies, especially babies, are suffering. There is, for example, in the clinics, if I say we're going to strengthen the primary health care, there is a nutritional facilities there in the clinic. Yes, we supply them, but we monitor them. Because you'll see mothers crying, either mothers don't even get that formula for their to feed their babies there. When they go, they say that, no, I'm not getting the supply. They say, I'm not going to get it, so I haven't got even milk for my baby, and I don't want to breastfeed. But there down there, who's monitoring that process so that those babies get the formula, which is right for them if they are not like Pelagon, for example. So they don't get it, who is monitoring them? If you can just start there to strengthen, must start there to monitor that process, that it goes well if we're talking about nutritional interventions in the HIV and AIDS mothers and their babies included. On page 15, on the slides, we are talking about single chronic care model, which will be rolled out into three districts. Now, if you can just explain to us, what about the other districts? I think most were about 52 districts. Now you are talking about three districts in South Africa. Therefore, are you piloting that you have got only 3 out of 52? And lastly, the OSD. The OSD, there's a gray area here, because we're talking about OSD, doctors and therapeutic top-ups. Now, I'm confused there. And yes, you are helping us when you're saying that the formula is not the same. It's not supposed to be the same. You're talking about the equitable share. But what about the gaps in the nursing categories? Because there are still cries and noises there about the OSD. If we say we want to retain, to be sure that the retention strategy is we are taking care of the retention strategy and also the human resource development, therefore, and improvement in conditions of service, what are we doing about those nurses who are still crying about this OSD problem, still a problem even now? I was a nurse there, it was a problem there whilst I was there in the hospital. It's becoming worse now. Now it is demoralizing the nurses when they see that now the OSD now is just shifting only to the doctors and therapeutic top-ups. I don't know what the therapeutic top-up means, but now it's shifting from the nursing profession. Would you just explain to me? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, sir. There is a request we allow you to respond to some of these things, because she's going to leave early. There's another meeting that we are deploying her to. So if you could respond, then we'll quickly have tea after that. If you could respond. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity.
Maybe don't go to the debate between Radele Khetlo and Makhe.
No, Chair, I wouldn't.
Just leave that one.
No, I wouldn't, Chair.
Oh.
Just to respond, Chair, I'd like to start with the questions you raised. The first one about why don't we have a different regulatory system for devices versus medicines. Chair, the Parliament passed the law, the SAPRA law, which actually creates a provisions for both to fall under the same regulatory regime. But if it is the wish of the Chair for us to review that, it would require that the law be amended. If we look at how other regulatory, and Chair, I'd like to share my experience having supported 193 countries. Most of the developing countries do not have infrastructure and systems to regulate devices. And if you go back to the Medicines and Related Substances Control Act, which was passed in 1965, it always had a provision for medical devices. But those provisions were never enacted. Even with the subsequent amendments, Chair, those provisions, if you go to Section 35 of the Medicines and Related Substances Control Act as amended, it still makes provision for regulations for medical devices. Meaning, if it was the wish of Parliament that we regulate devices, we could still have done it even without the provision for an amendment. But I was just saying, Chair, that the legal system that has been created in terms of SAPRA actually integrates devices and medicine. So unless it is required that we bring about amendments, that we will be guided by yourselves. The second area, Chair, is about the structure of health technology. The budget structure as provided highlights the service delivery agreement. Now, if you go back to the slides where I showed the health system's strengthening component, health technology is one leg. Health facility planning is another. The human resource element is yet. So you need to look at health system strengthening as a package, so that on one hand you can have health technology. If you don't have human resources, you'd still not be able to deliver on as you require. So Chair, the next level of chief directors and directors, this is an area where we need to look at what is the appropriate structure at that level that can help us deliver services. The comments have been made about the fact that allocations for information systems, that it's not enough. And I think there was that was the Chair, and there was yet another comment by Honourable Member, I think it was from Honourable Member Waters. I just want to say that, Chair, there are systems that have been developed using public funds, and those systems are available to roll out. We do not see why in this country we should take those systems that have been paid for by public funds and go yet and allocate for systems development further when we already have tools that can be used. We have PAP, Chair. We've evaluated all the systems in the public sector that have been used. And it is our considered opinion that these systems that have been developed using public funds can be used. What we have to do is to roll them out and implement them. The first one, Chair, PAP, is implemented to varying extents in different provinces. Western Cape has implemented PAP fully. What we want to do is to extend implementation of PAP to the rest of the other provinces so that we reach a certain level of functionality. Now, what PAP will do is that it will help us address what was said earlier about revenue retention. We'll be able to retain revenue and collect it. Collect and retain. And I think it's an important principle. The second system, Chair, that we've reviewed, it's a system that is also implemented in the Western Cape as well as Free State. We've looked at both. But what we wanted, again, the Western Cape system has been again developed with public funds. We are saying those systems that work, where money has already been paid, we are going to take them and implement them so that we don't have to incur more costs in yet developing more systems, because we think that it would be a waste of public resources. On the issue of funding for HST chairs, HST is not established in terms of parliament. It operates almost like an NGO. And it cannot be equated similarly like NHLS, which is established in terms of an Act of Parliament, the Council for Medical Schemes, as well as NHLS. Now, those three have formal reporting systems to Parliament. They have to prepare plans by which they can report to Parliament. We have actually confined the work of HST because HST does a health reviews, which I think are very useful, and they do barometers. Now we are just confining them to that way. They actually get funding, and we just want to ensure that there is no double dipping whatsoever. If they are funded for certain things, and also, Chair, we've also established that there is some work that was done by HST for which the department was already paid. So we don't want to fund that work again. So we're actually very systematic in the manner in which we engage them, so that whatever we request it to be for a specific task, and that we don't just generally provide funding where we're not sure that it will be for the results that we require. With regard to PAC versus tertiary, Chair, if you allow me, I would use the analogy that the minister uses by saying that if you look at the funding model at the moment, and you are so right, Chair, by saying that PAC, we seem to be putting more money in tertiary services versus PAC. Of course, this is how it reflects. At the moment, what makes this bloated is because of the way the conditional grants have been designed, and it also because we are indebted to the specialists that are supposed to be paid for OSD. You have different categories. We've got these specialists whose salaries are anyway between DDGs and DGs, and we have to pay them. So some of your funding from the higher tertiary education in your tertiary grant is going to pay for those. The second is that we are saying that we would like to have registrar's posts. If you look at the report that was produced by the College of Medicine and Committee of Deans, we have a problem with our specialists. We have just over 1,000 posts of registrars that are not filled. So essentially, we are saying you cannot run a health system. Even though emphasis is primary health care, we are not saying we are not going to have specialist posts. Primary health care does not have, you don't have specialists. I don't think that is the point. Now, if you create more registrar posts, if you build your tertiary care services, if you build your colleges, essentially what you say is that for the production of the workforce that you want, you have to make these work. So you can make investments here so that your production of your nurses, your doctors, because remember, your nurses is also not just primary care nurses. You want your midwives, you want your ICU nurses, you still want your ICU nurses, you still want your psychiatric nurses. Now, psychiatry in nursing is still a specialty in its own right. So I'm just saying that we have to be very cautious in separating healthcare, because healthcare is actually a continuum from primary healthcare to tertiary services. So what the way we describe it is that we have a pyramid that is facing the wrong way, where outwards. Now, for us to change it, in a normal and ideal society, you'll have it like this. Now, to move from here to there, you need to bring a balance between your primary health care and your tertiary services. So this is sort of that transition that we want. And in that transition, we'd like to put certain structures in place. But one particular thing, Chair, that we would like to do is to just commit our tertiary institutions to produce the number of doctors and nurses and specialists that we want, as a country to be able to respond. At the moment, if you look at our tertiary institution, they have specific numbers that they produce because they've got some international agreements that they've signed. That for them to maintain certain standards, they can't go beyond certain numbers, which is a bit of a problem for us. So we need to, they need to tell us, is it because their intake has to be limited? And if so, they need to increase it. And we want to tie them to formal service level agreements to produce the number of specialists, including health workers that are needed by the country. Now, you can, on one hand, say we want to recruit from other countries when you actually have institutions that produce. And when you look at the numbers, you have Zimbabweans that are trained to be doctors, but you don't have space for ordinary South Africans to be trained. There's no logic. So as you train Zimbabweans and Rwandans, you must also train South Africans. If you say you cannot bring in South Africans on board, we need to understand why. And these are the things, Chair, that we would like to commit to. We've already started a project, a similar project with WILS on a pilot basis. We've got a certain number of students where we say we would like to tie you to take this number of students to produce, and I think it's going to be important for the country. Chair, for OSD allocation, I think there's been a number of questions raised about OSD. Let me just say, Chair, OSD was not implemented properly. Whether from an administrative point of view, allocation point of view, and technical point of view, and it is for that reason that if you look at the agenda of the bargaining councils, we've had OSD every year. And the problem now is that if it comes as an agreement with the unions, it has to be implemented. It doesn't give you an option not to implement. That is the first problem. Now, the allocations that you see here is because there's already an agreement that must be respected. But having said that, we say we need to review so that we must go back to the drawing board and see exactly where the mistakes are. We've already picked up that the manner in which Treasury allocates for OSD is a problem, because they use equitable share instead of using the numbers. The second one is about the nurses, in a sense that when it was implemented, ma'am, for nurses, apparently there were overpayments. Now, the unions are saying we cannot recover that money from the nurses. Now, for you now to go back and introduce different categories of nurses, you have to have a structured program so that you avoid the mistakes of the past. I can already share with you which categories we think should have been included. Your midwives are not included. Your infection control nurses are not included. And these are the two categories that we need, and we need badly. We need midwives because we want to reduce maternal mortality rates. We need the infection control nurses because now what is happening? Because they don't have OSD, they're actually moving away from infection control to do other things. So it's one particular reason why we have the review. So we're hoping that we'll get the results of the review soon, so that it can be the basis of us revising how best we package a compensation of health workers. Chair, to respond to Honorable Mike Waters, yes, you are right, these things should have been done. And what is different this time about? I just want to share with members, and if I have an opportunity, I will try and get the World Health Report. Now, the World Health Organization produces a World Health Report on annual basis on a specific topic. For the year 2010, the World Health Report was dedicated to healthcare financing. And in particular, Chair, it talks to issues of universal coverage. And this report was launched in December 2010. So it's quite hot of the press. And I'd like to share with you what the principles are about universal coverage and why we need to do this. And why this time, even this allocation that we say these things should have happened anyway. Yes, they should. But we've recognized that unless you say you are preparing a system to respond, it will be business as usual. And you say it is not business as usual. There are two principles, Chair. One is that we recognize that there are quality problems in the public sector. And those quality problems are costly. And we cannot afford to have them continue as they are. And we need to make dedicated support and investments. That is for the public sector. For the private sector, we say there are significant costs in the private sector. We know where the costs are. We know that the hospitals, private hospitals, are consuming a significant amount of the budget in the private sector. We know that specialists are consuming a significant amount in the private sector. If you look at membership check, most members consume their medical aid. Half year, they're already exhausted. Now ask South Africans who are on medical aid. They will tell you that midway, they cannot get medical cover because it's exhausted. They do two things, Chair. They either go to the public sector, which they're not happy with because they're not happy with quality, or they pay out of pocket. Now, what this report does in WHO is that we need to protect people from catastrophic effect of paying out of pocket. Because when people are sick, they will either stay at home and die at home, or they will pay out of pocket, or they'll use public facilities. So what NHI must do is to correct all of that. And in correcting that, we need to do three things. The three-dimensional approach is to say that we increase universal cover and we determine the package of services. And that will determine the costing model that we follow. And that will help us then determine what is it that we want to do and what type of cover do we want to provide. And I just wanted to sort of respond in a nutshell that it is not just about health financing, but it's also about service delivery and extending cover. And I want to use a simple example, Chair. If you are not on medical cover in this country, it means if your hospital facility is here and you stay here and you have a private sector facility here, you cannot use this private facility, you must go there. But when we have NHI, a South African will be able to use a facility that they can access easily. And this is a model that as a country we should look forward to. Improving access, improving coverage, and ensuring that people can get a basic package of services. And I think this is a principle. So in preparing for that, we must ensure that the standards in both public and private meet those that are acceptable and those that we are happy with. And I think this is the principle, Chair. With regard to the other questions, Chair, about provincial stabilization, I agree, Honorable Member, that you can't put money into a leaking bucket. And like we had that the principle has been that the provinces must improve their finances. There shouldn't be this stabilization. But now that it has been allocated, maybe the correct thing is that for subsequent years, yes, it should be reduced and revised. I think it's reasonable. We should consider that. For the forensic lab, the current allocation, honorable members, is that for the laboratory we've got an allocation of 39 million, and this amount will be over and above this allocation, meaning to improve the performance of the forensic laboratories. Now, what we will do with the money, we've actually increased the number of personnel for the forensic lab. But I would like to take this opportunity to say that, you know, some of these things happen because we have a provision in the National Labs Act that required that the forensic chemistry labs should fall under NHLS. Now, that provision has not come into force. And I think this is what we should be looking at to say, if NHLS operates efficiently, maybe these labs should fall under NHLS. But the provisions in the Act are already there. And maybe we should look at how that happens. For radiation control, Chair, if you look at the health, the SAPRA Act, which is supposed to establish a regulatory system, the proposal at the moment is that radiation control should fall under that. And this, at the moment, the process has begun of negotiating with the unions to see how the staff of all the entities are going to be moved over to be part of the new establishment. Chair, the problem with the condoms, I agree. We cannot continue to perpetuate.
So, sorry, what is SAPRA?
It's the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, which is supposed to replace MCC. For the condoms, Chair, I agree. I have also engaged our colleagues in SANAC and in the department. We really need to address the inequities. we however need to look at how we can promote usage, because I think the problem with condoms is that we cannot validate, verify that they are used. But what we know is that even with a few female condoms, they are used in the prisons. Not the male condoms, the female condoms are used in prisons. This is the report that we got from Correctional Services, our colleagues. So the question is, if that is the case, and they find their way where they are not supposed to be used, or maybe they should be or not, I don't know, but it raises a concern. And we need to find a way of getting the women access the condoms in an appropriate way. With regard to the immunization target, I agree, we should achieve 100%, not 95%. The cervical cancer coverage, if in the normal course of events our cancer coverage would be those targets, we would like to establish a baseline, because we need to understand, because of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, the increase in the number of women with cervical cancer as opposed to those that would get cancer anyway. Is an area that would like to further study. Why? Because we would like also to see whether the use of human papilloma virus vaccine, HPV vaccine, would actually help us reduce the incidence. Chair, in response to Honorable Member Khanare, And also in relation to what the Honorable Chair said earlier, the religious sector, SANAC has a religious sector, but I think we need to escalate the manner in which traditional medicine is practiced. We have a provision of establishing a council for traditional medicine practitioners, meaning that regulatory body must be strengthened so that there must be better oversight. Chair, about 2 weeks ago, I received an email with an advert that says there are some people who would like to buy human body parts. An advert. So we're busy with an investigation to see where it emanates from, whether it's a formal, a system that is emerging in the country. It is also related to what we're saying, Chair, about how body parts are used for traditional use. But if we can just have this regulatory system, I think it will help us a lot. The nursing colleges, the 9 million allocation, we have two allocations. One is about the college and the infrastructure. Now, the health infrastructure allocation, Chair, is to help us to improve the status of the colleges. Those that needs to be improved. Now, from the nursing summit, because we've got a problem with the training approach in the past, we've said it repeatedly, that we want to bring back nursing to bedside training, and we would like to use some of the funds for that purpose. This will be for intake, but it will also be to increase the numbers. But because we put a lot of funding into the tertiary services, that includes funding for colleges and for the training of nurses. It's not just for doctors. The health systems trust, I've already explained. The hospital revive, yes, some of the funds will be used, Honorable Member, for equipment. We've just done that with the recent problems we had in Gauteng by saying to provinces that we cannot continue to have Chris Hani Barra complaining about scanners. It is for that reason that we set up the equipment committees. Those equipment committees are the ones who are going to ensure that as we build, we also ensure that there's equipment. Honorable Lekgetho, the construction of hospitals, these have not been built. We plan to have them built. But we're also saying that there are certain hospitals where you don't have to build them from scratch. You just have to upgrade and revitalize. I was trying to run away from the word revitalize. For instance, Chris Hani Barra, it would be very difficult to relocate Chris Hani Barra from where it is. So the idea is that we'll have to demolish certain blocks and rebuild them. And that is one approach. But for others, you have to build from scratch and relocate them. But that relocation is going to be important in for us. It's going to be important to ensure that we do not deny people access by rebuilding elsewhere. We still have to ensure people can still access those facilities. For the TB defaulters, yes, indeed, TB is a problem. So what we are going to be doing, Chair, with your comment also about the fact that as we detect and we improve our case finding, the reality, Chair, as you know, medically speaking, if we were to all be tested for TB, we'd probably prove that you are positive. But it doesn't mean we've got active TB. And I think that's the difference. It's to pick up those people who should be on treatment. And I think would like, because there's a lot of bacilli, Chair, in the air. And particularly, as you know, historically, this province has always had a lot of TB caseloads. In particular, we have a recent report that has just been released about MDR, TB, and so on. So for us to reduce that burden, we have to treat people early. And the only way is to have case findings. I think it should be our approach. The discrepancy in condoms I've answered. The working with the mines, yes indeed, Chair. There are two problems to TB. It's not just its link to pulmonary related diseases that are occupation specific. It's also because of the comorbidity with HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. Now, significant number of people who have TB, you can link it to HIV. Now, our problem is that because people think that when they disclose that they've got TB, we can draw a conclusion from there that they are HIV positive. It's going to make people not to come out. That's why I would like to really go out on an outreach in circumstances where it's comfortable for them to accept that they can be treated with their families and a support program. I think it's going to be significant. The difference with TB, Chair, is that with HIV AIDS, it's a matter of choice. You can make a decision. TB, you don't have to. You're in a bus, you can catch TB. You've got a helper that has TB, you catch TB. You're in a train, you catch TB. You're in a meeting like this, you catch TB. So it's not a matter of choice. That's the difference, Chair. This is why we need to do active case finding, and would like to put a lot of resources in doing that so that we can save more lives and increase the burden. decrease the burden, yes. The organizational structure, the organizational structure of the hospital. Honorable member, I just wanted to say that the quality improvement plans and the organizational structure, we're in discussion with DPSA. The one element of the organizational structure of the hospital is that we've got CEOs, and these were the findings that you've just heard from all the CEO, of the CEO assessment that was done by DPSA. The structures are inappropriate in a sense that you cannot have somebody at level 8 running a hospital. It cannot be. Now, the reports reflect that we've got people who are at level 8 who are running hospitals. We've got people who are actually not appropriately qualified to run hospitals who have been appointed. So that is our fundamental problem. We have to resolve that problem. The second is about, I said this in the past presentation, Chair, and I think this is the reflection in the province, that there's been an increase in administrative posts versus the number of technical and clinical and medical and nursing posts. So we're trying to get the provinces to create those posts. So it is for that reason there was a moratorium on administrative posts to say no more directors, chief directors should be appointed. You should rather appoint more nurses, more doctors. I think that is the principle. So we just want to validate the numbers that we have that we downloaded from PESA. Of the doctors and the nurses, each province must tell us, and they have to then confirm the vacancy rate, and we have to go back to see whether over a period are they employing nurses or doctors. and we'll have the, those reports sent to us on a regular basis. Chair, we agree with the Honourable Member that you can't move nurses from clinical posts to administrative one. So it's precisely why we've kept a moratorium for administrative posts. And equally, we would like to ensure that we have more nurses and PHC nurses in primary health care services, trained nurses for school health. And I just wanted to say to Honourable Member, our nutritional strategy, we're of the view that when we talk about nutrition, it's nutrition for babies, but it's also nutrition for those who are ill, those who have TB, those who have HIV AIDS and so on. We would like to have an opportunity actually to share with you the results of the increased transmission that is associated with mixed feeding. Women who breastfeed and give babies, who give formula feeds, and they are HIV positive, there's been an increase in transmission rates. So we'd like to come back, Chair, and share the results, because to just say we should give formula feeds, we're also increasing the risk of transmission. We have that data. We've done a systematic review of all available literature about formula feeds, breastfeeding, and so on, and we'd like to share that with you, so that from that point of view, we can say what is the best feeding model that will reduce the burden of disease. Like I said, Chair, our target must be to have HIV-free survival at 24 months, meaning we want healthy babies who are free of AIDS at 24 months. The chronic care model, yes, Honourable Member, is about a pilot, and once you understand the outcome of the results, we can then expand it to the rest of the district. OSD have already spoken about, and I would like to thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you very much. What we're going to do, I think we'll just have tea, and then after tea for 10 minutes, and then after tea we come back and then get your questions until 1 o'clock. Much as we agree with you, DG, on most of the things, then thank you very much for answering these questions. But I think we still need to engage ourselves on that primary health care and tertiary services, because those people that you produce, the specialists, they are supposed to be visiting those rural areas. And that is not happening, and it doesn't seem that it's there in the budget. And in fact, even the tertiary services, you find that the tertiary services are not equally given human resources. When you go to Walter Sisulu down there, you don't find a lot of specialists. You find them in Cape Town and Joburg. And this is how we need to find a way of balancing that. And when it comes to the TV, I think, much as I agree with you with what you have said on TB, but I think our research or the statistics that we have on TB, I don't think they're right. Somebody can convince me, you can convince me in another way. I don't think Western Cape has got a bigger burden of TB as compared to Eastern Cape. It's only that we don't have full statistics there. Here we've got statistics. That's why they seem to. But we can discuss it out after this meeting. I'm just talking about what I think is probably happening. So I'm very happy with the uniform system. This is what we're looking for. We're looking for a uniform system of information, not where you find Eastern Cape is doing this, Western Cape is doing that, and obviously. Members, department, let's go for tea. And then for 10 minutes, and then I'll come back.